Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I'm your host, Coach Elizabeth. When I started running at the age of 29, I had so many questions and what felt like nowhere to turn to for answers. So now I'm here to answer all your questions about running and running adjacent topics to help you become a better, smarter, more knowledgeable runner. Whether you're brand new or you've been doing this for a while, there's always more we can learn about running. And now you can train with Running Explained wherever you go. Check out the new Run Club by Running Explained app. The Run Club by Running Explained gives you the freedom to build your own training schedule using Running Explained training plans, including training for races, building your base, post-race recovery, running for fitness, and more, and you can swap between plans as needed. Then layer on a running-specific strength training program that matches your goals and includes plyo, core, and mobility. Plus, you have instant access to a variety of resources at your fingertips, including training guides, pacing resources, Run Fueling 101, and more. Join the Run Club Plus for a monthly live group coaching call led by me, Coach Elizabeth, plus in-app chat support and other fun inclusions. Start your 3-day free trial now at runningexplained.co/theRunClub or by visiting the link in the show notes. And now let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I'm Coach Elizabeth, and this week we are talking about how long does it take to actually lose fitness when you take time off? Because this is something that I get a lot of questions about, usually in the context of people freaking out that they need to take an unplanned rest day, or that they got sick, or that they're dealing with an injury, or that they are going on vacation, or that life happened and they missed a couple runs and they are absolutely losing their minds out of anxiety and fear that all of the hard work that they have done will essentially evaporate. I am here to tell you that it takes a lot longer than you think to actually lose fitness, and that by and large, your fitness losses are reversible. Cool, right? All right, let's dive in. Before we get started, we're going to agree on the terminology that we're using in this episode today. So what we're calling detraining, that is the technical definition for loss of fitness, a detraining effect. So training, right? Improving fitness, detraining, loss of fitness. There are many different components to your fitness that make up your ability to perform in a certain way. And these all are changed at a different rate. Your fitness is not a monolith. It's not like, oh, here's your fitness. It is this impenetrable. No, your fitness is the makeup of all these different parts of your body, these different systems that work in different ways and are affected differently by different applications or removals of training stimuli. Detraining is not always a bad thing. In training, in the life of an athlete, in your life, as you exercise, as you run, as you train for certain goals, train for specific races, including intentional periods of detraining is actually part of the fitness gaining process. I'll give you an example. After a big race, you trained for 4 months and then you ran a half marathon and then you PR'd and it was amazing, or maybe it sucked and you did terribly because of XYZ. Okay, either way, now it's time to recover. During the recovery process, you may likely lose a very small amount of fitness. This is intentional and normal because you cannot maintain peak fitness year-round. If it were called base fitness, it wouldn't be your peak fitness, right? You are never, ever, ever going to be super fit 365 days per year. And additionally, what people tend to think of as loss of fitness when it is accompanied by short-term cessations in training, like taking a week off after a race to recover, is typically more about the residual fatigue that they are going through rather than any loss of fitness. Because by and large, taking up to a week off from training has very little impact on your fitness. And in some cases, can actually improve your fitness values because you needed the recovery. The loss of fitness should not be the thing that you fear the most as an athlete. And yet, it is the one thing that seems to send most people into an absolute tailspin, especially when it's accompanied by absolutely no indication that your fitness isn't decreasing. Like, I think this is really important to note. Today we're talking about detraining related to cessation of training. As in, like, yeah, if when you stop, eventually you're going to start to lose some fitness. If you are actively training for something and you feel like you're getting slower, that's not detraining. That literally is a definition of if you are training for something and training regularly and not missing anything and doing your workouts and getting your runs in and increasing your volume, right? And you feel like you're getting slower, that's not detraining because by definition, you are applying a training stimulus. What you're probably experiencing is fatigue. Fatigue accompanies training, right? And the point of training is to get a lot of fitness in. And then the point of the taper before your race is to shed all that fatigue so that on race day, you're all fitness, no fatigue. And then after the race, you're like all fatigue and your fitness is buried under that fatigue. And yes, eventually enough time off and you will start to lose fitness. We'll talk about that timeline and how it actually happens. But I really want to start out by saying loss of fitness is not something that you need to worry about, freak out about. It's not the most important thing in your life that you're trying to avoid. And it is in many situations, something that you are needing to have happen as part of your overall training process. Embrace it. It's a lot more enjoyable than having a panic attack about it. This is also something that I see. I have gently suggested to some athletes that I've worked with in the past that this might be something that they want to talk to a sports psychologist about. I have seen athletes be so terrified about losing fitness that they then start exhibiting symptoms of an unhealthy relationship with training. Being so afraid that you're going to lose fitness that you train through injury. Being so afraid that you're going to lose fitness that you train through illness. Or that you are running the day after your giant race, even though like you're sore and kind of limping around and probably should have gone for a walk or stayed home instead, right? Who are sacrificing sleep on a regular basis because they're so afraid of losing fitness. At that point, I would argue loss of fitness is not the concern here. The relationship that you have to how you feel about losing fitness, that's what we need to talk about. And I'm not qualified to do that. So that's why I gently recommend that if you are experiencing any sorts of that situation when it comes to losing fitness, I think speaking with a qualified mental health professional, specifically one who works with athletes, would be really, really helpful. Because you're not alone in this. Like I said, this is something that I hear a lot. I'm so afraid of losing fitness. I'm so afraid of ruining my race. In some situations, taking time off is completely unavoidable. In situations of illness or injury, you may need to take time off, and you also may need or be required to, as part of your recovery process, lose some fitness during that time. Ideally, that's not often, but it will happen. There also may be periods of your life where you simply don't have the time, energy to devote to running as much as you would in another phase of your life, or another season of your life. And you are not going to maintain or gain as much fitness. You might even lose a little bit of fitness during that time. And that's okay. What we're going to talk about mostly today in the context of detraining is what happens when you stop. What happens when you stop entirely? What happens if you were to just come home one day and say, nope, I'm not exercising at all for the foreseeable future? How fast will it take for you to actually lose fitness? So at its core, your fitness is use it or lose it, right? And that makes sense. This can also be stated as the principle of reversibility, right? So that when you remove something or stop doing something, right, the state that the thing improved will be reduced, right? So when you're training consistently and then you stop training consistently, you're going to reverse the effect that your training had, but it goes both ways, right? So if you are in a state of a lower training status and you apply a training stimulus, you can reverse that. You can go back to being in a state of better fitness, in a state of better training status, okay? So yes, this is whole use it or lose it, and then you can get it back. But how long does this actually take? So fitness loss is not a linear process. You are not going to lose X amount of fitness every single day of inactivity. And like I said, your fitness is not a monolith. So we talk about is different systems in your body being affected in different ways on different timelines. You may notice that after a week off, maybe you feel kind of like crap on that first run back. Maybe it feels like you've lost a lot of fitness. Maybe you feel amazing, actually, and that means that you were probably just experiencing a ton of fatigue, and that's normal, right? But let's say you take a week off. You may experience something that feels like, oh my God, I've lost so much fitness. Actually, that's impossible. You can't lose that much fitness in a week. Like you can't. Like it takes a long time to gain, takes a lot longer than you think it does to lose. You took a week off. Let's say you took 5 days off. Technically, it's 5 days. I round up to a week because quibbling about two extra days is probably not beneficial for your mental health when it comes to this topic, right? And most of us are doing this for fun. You're not doing it for a paycheck, I hope. If you are, hi, do you need a coach? I'm just kidding. So yeah, about a week off, you're not going to lose any fitness. Like if we put you in a lab on a Sunday and then you took a week off and we put you in the lab the next Sunday, your values would basically be the same. They might even get better. But yeah, not actually happening. So why does it feel like you can lose so much fitness in a week? One, you may actually be flirting with being in a state of overtraining, and the recovery actually allows some of the hormones in your body that influence kind of your tolerance for these types of things to level out. And so you feel like you have lost fitness because your body is essentially like not putting up with that crap anymore and it started to actually repair and recover. I know, it's kind of weird, right? This happens a lot with runners who are running everything too hard or too fast, or doing everything in that moderate or high intensity zone. And you take a week off and you come back and you're like, oh my God, why does everything feel so hard? Well, probably because you were overtrained before, and now your body is finally starting to recover, and then you're asking it to do this thing that you'd kind of like normalized before, but after taking a week off, you realize your body's not having it. Our body's incredibly complicated and incredibly sophisticated, and it's really smart. If you're asking it to do things, it will really, really try to do those for you. If you're asking it to do too much most days, it's really gonna try to do it. And it's gonna release a bunch of hormones and do a bunch of things that you can't see and I can't understand because they're like biochemical in nature. They're gonna try to support that. Now, you're running on borrowed time, sometimes literally, because it's not a sustainable way of being. But when you take a break and then all kind of comes crashing down, yeah, you didn't lose fitness. You just really needed to take some time off. The other way that sometimes this happens, if you're like, hey, Elizabeth, like I listen to the show. I don't run everything in zone 3 or 4. Like I've got my stuff together. But yet I took a week off and now I feel like a baby deer on ice. That has more to do with more of like a neuromuscular sharpness. Just being blunted a little bit more than anything else. You're not actually losing fitness. You just kind of lost some of that muscle memory. Just feels a little bit awkward, right? Don't let it freak you out. You can take up to a week off with essentially, like I said, zero changes to your actual fitness. So the next time that you finished a big race, took a week off, and are back for your first run, and are wondering to yourself, oh my God, how did I run that giant race only last week? Because today I am struggling through 3 miles. Yeah, that's not loss of fitness. That's because you are still really, really, really fatigued from your race. Even if you're not sore anymore, it can take a long time to actually recover from a big race, like a half marathon or a marathon or an ultra. So don't freak out. You're not actually losing fitness by that week off. You're just really fatigued. You just can't like feel it in the way that I think we tend to conceptualize fatigue. So a week off, don't worry. Unplanned rest day, like honestly, take it. You need it. If you are sick or injured up to a week off, you may need to slowly reintroduce your training back in depending on how sick or injured you were. But by and large, if you take a week off and there's no underlying reason, you could just return to your training like just where you picked up or skip over what you missed. No big deal. If you are injured or sick, it's a little bit of a different deal. You may need to ease back into it, especially with injury. Talk to your physical therapist about that. With sickness, just be careful. Slowly ease into stuff. Even if you feel like you're 100% recovered, if you're experiencing things like a, you know, reduced endurance, or like if you feel like you've lost fitness, again, that's not loss of fitness. It's your body still working through recovering from that illness. Your body is always talking to you, but you may not be listening. Increased heart rate, decreased endurance, right? Feeling awkward. After just a week off of training, that's not loss of fitness. That's your body trying to tell you something else is going on. But what about more than a week? What happens? What happens when we get beyond 1 week? We do start to see detraining effects take hold from here. Now, like I said, it's not a linear process. You go through periods where you kind of have these initial big changes to your fitness because of some initial changes to some key systems, and then it kind of levels off. And then if you continue to be inactive, you're going to see kind of another loss and it'll kind of like, you know, decrease, and then it kind of levels off. But I think, you know, a lot of people are afraid of, if I take a couple weeks off, I'm going to essentially lose literally everything that I've trained so hard for. And no, you don't. You won't. It does not happen that quickly. Yes, you will lose some fitness. Take 10 weeks off, 9 weeks off, completely off. You're absolutely going to lose some fitness and you're going to feel it. You're going to have to work to get it back, but you are absolutely not back where you started. And it's also easier to get it back than it was to get it the first time. All right, so what are some of the biggest changes that we start to see right off the bat? So some of the biggest changes that we start to see when it comes to the detraining effect is we're going to see reductions in our blood plasma volume that are going to result in changes to our stroke volume and cardiac output and also to our VO2 max. And you're like, wait, what? Yep, I know. I talked about these different systems, right? All these different things that add up to allowing you to perform in a certain way. This is one of them. Your blood volume is probably not something that you think about that much, but it's actually a really key component to being a trained individual. It's also a key component of being heat acclimated. So part of increasing your training status to a point, like we all have a point where like enough is enough, increases to your blood volume, primarily through your blood plasma, which is mostly water. It's where your sweat comes from, but it also helps increase the volume of blood that you have available to move around in your body, which can then help deliver more nutrients like glucose and red blood cells with oxygen in them to places where you need them, like the muscles in your legs, so you can run. Blood volume in general is connected to your ability to deliver oxygen to your skeletal muscle tissues, which is one of the ways that our VO2 max can be affected. Because our VO2 max is our maximal ability to use oxygen. And we all have a threshold. Our VO2 max is the maximal ability that we have to, okay, get the oxygen from the air into our lungs, from our lungs into our bloodstream, from our bloodstream into our muscle, skeletal muscle tissue, from our skeletal muscle tissue into our mitochondria. Now, there are a lot of places along that route where there could be limiting factors, right? Maybe you can get all of the oxygen that you need into your lungs, right? But you have low iron, so your ability to transport oxygen through your bloodstream is significantly reduced. That will impact your VO2 max. Let's say that your red blood cells are like super beefy. They eat their spinach and they can deliver all the oxygen you might ever need, elite level oxygen levels, to your skeletal muscle tissue, except that there is no capillaries. There's no roads. So they got to like drop the oxygen off like over at the end of here, and then they got to transport it all the way into your skeletal muscle tissue. Well, that takes time. That's a limiting factor right there. Let's say you have the capillaries. Your muscles are super densely capillarized. It's called angiogenesis, the creation of new blood vessels. And capillary density in your skeletal muscle tissues is one of the things that happens when you improve your fitness, especially your aerobic fitness. So you got all these roads going into your muscle tissue. Your oxygen's being dropped right at the door, except your mitochondria suck. Your mitochondria are wimpy. Mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell, except there's like one of them and it's like open part-time. That's going to be a limiting factor. But you've done your aerobic training. You've done your anaerobic training. Your mitochondria are both plentiful and massive, right? Now we can see the full effect of get all the oxygen into your lungs, all the oxygen in your blood, into your bloodstream, all the oxygen to your skeletal muscles, all the oxygen into your mitochondria. Boom. Maximizing our VO2 max. Any change to any one of those components will impact your VO2 max. So when we talk about changes to fitness and say things like, oh, you can expect a 6% decrease in VO2 max after whatever 14 to 17 days of inactivity, is it actually because your literal VO2 max has decreased, or is it because your blood plasma volume has decreased, decreasing the actual volume of red blood cells that can deliver oxygen to your skeletal muscle tissue and your mitochondria? Ah, so all you need to do is increase your blood plasma volume and boom, that's reversed. And they actually did that. They did that in a study back in the 80s. They took cyclists and they did that exact same thing. They measured all their baselines and, you know, blood volume and like total blood and blood plasma and all of that. And they had them do nothing for 2 weeks. I think they did 2 weeks and 4 weeks and took blood and did tests at both those times. They basically found that, yep, okay, if you detrain, you are going to experience a drop in VO2 max. And then what they did was they took these cyclists who had been doing nothing for a couple weeks and who had, you know, demonstrated that reduction in VO2 max, and they injected them with saline and glucose solution into their bloodstream to put their blood volume back to where it was before there was a detraining effect. And guess what? Their performance rate went right back to where it was before they took those 2 weeks off. So that's pretty cool, because it's, again, it's not about this monolith of what your fitness is. It's about these little systems that all get impacted. Some of them are very reversible, some of them less so. And the longer you spend detrained, of course, the more impact you're going to feel and the more you're going to have to work to get it back. But don't freak out if it's just a, you know, 1 or 2 weeks. So yes, you're going to start to see some changes after 3 weeks of no training. And by no training, we're really talking about inactivity. We're not talking about, oh, but I went hiking instead, or I'm in the pool instead, or, you know, I'm still very active, I'm just not running. We're talking about, this is no training. This is cessation of training stimulus. 3 weeks, stroke volume is reduced, meaning there's less blood being pumped with each heartbeat, because your blood plasma volume is reduced. And around 3 weeks, you may start to see signs of some muscle mass loss. So again, use it or lose it, but this is one of the reasons we can cut out strength training before a race and have it not affect our race. We still maintain the strength gains because it takes a lot longer for strength to go away. So, right? So 3 weeks, start to see that. We are start to seeing aerobic enzymes decrease. So the enzymes that help create energy aerobically, we're going to start to, again, use it or lose it. Like, they're not being used, so your body's not going to keep maintaining those. The cool thing about the aerobic enzymes, though, so again, we're talking about, after a week, you are going to see some pretty significant changes initially, but then they level out. The aerobic enzymes, they do drop quickly and then level out. So research indicates, the enzyme they're looking at is this enzyme called citrate synthase, right? So after 3 weeks, that enzyme activity decreases by about 20%, right? And a study that looked at this measured citrate synthase, you know it's an enzyme because it ends in an A's, drops 40% after 56 days of no training, but then is stable. Kind of stabilizes from there and is still higher than in untrained individuals who have never trained. It's pretty cool. So there are some things, like I said, big drop off and then stabilizes. Same with VO2 max. Research indicates that after the initial big drop off to your VO2 max after about 4 weeks of inactivity, it then stabilizes and doesn't really decrease that much. Now, the issue with the way that the research goes on detraining effects is that it doesn't really look much past around the 12-week mark of detraining. Because in order to do this research, you are asking people to be in a detrained or an inactive state for a long time. And it's just hard to do research on that. It's just tough. Get people to say, okay, we're going to take you and you're going to be well-trained and then you're going to do nothing for 6 months and we're going to see what happens. The incentive would have to be large in order to make that happen. It would just be a tough study to design. So we do tend to see a lot of research around detraining effects before durations 8 weeks or 12 weeks, right? They don't typically go much beyond that. Eventually, if you were highly trained and then you stopped, you did absolutely nothing, you led an entirely sedentary life for years, you probably would still retain some vestiges of that state of being trained. It may feel like you've lost everything, but you are still going to have a slightly higher base fitness than if you'd never been in a trained state to begin with. So aerobic enzymes stabilize about a 40% reduction. VO2 max stabilizes around a 20% reduction. So we are experiencing, significant changes to your fitness, and you would feel it if you took 4 weeks completely off and then go try to run a time trial. But there are some of those, like I said, things that stabilize. If you are taking 4 weeks of complete inactivity, it's going to be for a really good reason, right? It's going to be because you needed to, because you were sick, or because you were injured, or because your mental health needed that time, or because life got absolutely insane and you were dealing with everything coming at you left, right, and center. And getting out for a run, although you may have wanted to, was literally the last thing that was going to happen. Sometimes these things happen, and that's okay. But I want to remind you that your fitness is not as fragile as you think it is. There was a study they did back in the mid-80s that looked at retention of anaerobic fitness gains after a period of inactivity. So they took some cyclists, they trained them for 9 weeks, and over that 9-week period, the cyclists improved their anaerobic threshold by around 70% compared to their initial anaerobic threshold. And then they had the cyclists do nothing for 9 weeks. So 9 weeks of training, 9 weeks of inactivity. After 9 weeks of inactivity, the cyclists had retained about 40% of their original gains from the 9 weeks of training they had done. They didn't go back to zero. They didn't lose all of it. In fact, they didn't even lose half of it. Okay? So yeah, it's a lot. They lost a lot of it, but it didn't disappear. And it is easier to regain lost fitness than it was to gain it in the first place. Furthermore, when we talk about the reversibility of that detraining effect, it does appear that that initial big change to your fitness in detraining is actually what takes the longest to recover, right? So if you did nothing for 2 weeks and then you return to training, you would be in a very similar position in terms of how long it would take to regain that fitness than if you had taken 3 weeks off or even 4 weeks off, because it's the initial big loss of fitness that your body is reacting to. Now, again, we're not talking about years here. We're talking about, okay, you've took 2 weeks off, take, I don't know, 4 weeks. There are all these rules of thumb, not even rules of thumb, be like, oh, it takes as many weeks as you took off to get it back, or it takes twice as many weeks to get back. It depends. It depends on the person. It depends on why you took time off. If you were injured or sick, what kind of training you were doing, your overall training status, how long have you been doing this, right? What are you expecting to happen? How is your life stressed right now? That's always a big one. So yeah, by and large, if it took 2 weeks off, it's going to take at least 2 weeks to regain your fitness from those 2 weeks off, but probably not that much, maybe three or four weeks. Because by and large, once you've changed some of the structures within your body, those structures don't change even though training has ceased. There's a really cool thing, detraining about mitochondria. I think mitochondria is super cool. Mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell. Detraining causes a loss in mitochondrial content, not mitochondrial structure. All right, so what we talk about with the blood plasma thing, put the blood plasma back to where it was, and your fitness is where it was after 2 weeks of not training. Mitochondrial structure, right? So you have your mitochondria, and let's say you've been training for a couple years, and you have a lot, you've been doing a lot of long and, you know, low and slow, a lot of easy effort running. That builds mitochondrial density, the number of mitochondria that you have. You've been doing appropriate high intensity work, you know, speed work, not too much, because too much is actually detrimental, but enough, right? So it improves your mitochondrial size. Big mitochondria, you got these big, many big beefy mitochondria. And then you stop training. You are completely inactive for 8 weeks. Well, the mitochondrial content will start to change. You will lose kind of how robust the content of those mitochondria are. So mitochondrial content, like you have these proteins in there and enzymes and all these different things that help you create energy. And so, you know, if you're not using them that much, they're going to start to say, well, I don't need this, I don't need that. But hey, guess what? The mitochondria itself is still there. It's still big and gigantic and plentiful. So it's much easier to refill something than it was to build it that way in the first place. So yeah, it takes time to refill it, but you still have the structure there. Same thing with the capillaries, capillarization, the angiogenesis of, you know, having all those capillaries that deliver all the stuff that you need into your skeletal muscle tissue. Those don't go anywhere. You still have those capillaries. I mean, eventually, maybe a couple years, they will start to decrease. But 8 to 12 weeks of training has not indicated a change in muscle capillarization. A lot of the structures are still in place. That's why it's so much quicker to regain it than it was to build it in the first place. It just does have that, like I said, initial drop, and then it does stabilize. Now, taking more than 3 months completely off, you are going to enter pretty much a baseline state. Depending on your training status previously and how your natural level of talent and how well trained you were before and for how long, your base level of fitness is likely going to be higher, and sometimes much higher to people who were untrained entirely. And again, the structures are still there. But when we are talking about taking 3 months, 6 months, a year completely off, we are talking about significant losses to fitness that will take time to rebuild. Now, if you need to take this time off, you absolutely need to take this time off. Like I said, for illness or for injury or for life stuff, sometimes these things just happen. Sometimes these things happen and there's absolutely no alternative. And in that case, fighting against it isn't going to help. But where I really would caution against and where I tend to see these types of gaps in training more commonly is people who are typically train for one, maybe two races per year. And we're doing a lot of going from nothing to everything, not doing our easy running. Everything's kind of moderate or high intensity. We have big changes in volume. By the time you get to race day, you are so freaking burnt out that after the race, you are done. You're like, oh my God, I'm done with that. I'm freaking exhausted. I need to take some time off. I feel really burned out. Like I feel bad. Maybe I got injured. Maybe I got sick. Maybe it's both. So you take 3 or 4 months off until it's time to start training for your next race. Or maybe you take 6 months off until it's time to start training for that same race again next year. You are essentially starting over every single time. And that sucks to have to do. And it's going to be much more enjoyable if we pull back a little bit on the training that you are doing so that you can train more consistently long term. That's the pattern that I tend to see with runners who are taking these huge chunks of time off that aren't related to illness or injury. If it feels like you're always starting over after taking months off, it's because you basically are. One of the most effective ways to improve your fitness long term is to be consistent over the long haul, over years. Best way to do it. So we've talked in this episode so far essentially about detraining with the complete cessation of all physical activity, right? Like you went from doing something, anything, to doing absolutely nothing beyond tasks of daily living, right? No cross training, no strength training, nada, zilch, zip, niet, nothing. Because that's what a lot of the detraining studies do, right? Because it's, again, all these it depends. It's really hard to quantify what an effective dose would be on athlete A versus athlete B. Like we have to control for so many variables. So it's so much easier to just be like, just don't do anything. Do nothing. That's way easier to measure. Do nothing until we tell you to do something again. But essentially doing anything, any form of training will slow, will delay the detraining effect, mitigate the detraining effect. Now, I'll be honest with you, sometimes doing this is not in your best interests, okay? If you are in that camp of losing my fitness feels like the worst thing could possibly happen to me and I will do literally anything to prevent it, even if it means training through illness, injury, or whatever else, yeah, I would gently suggest maybe you do take some time off, right? Because there are a lot worse things in the world than losing a little bit of fitness, okay? Trust me, there are. But at the same time, there are ways where you can maintain some level of fitness even if you are training significantly less. And a little goes a long way when it comes to this. Essentially, any amount of exercise will reduce the detraining effect. How much? It depends. Ultra running coach Jason Koop looked at exactly this topic and synthesized some pretty cool data. So I'm referring to his blog post about this from trainwright.com, looking at decreases in training and the effect that it has on fitness and essentially getting an estimate of how long it would take to return to your previous level of fitness. So looking at a training reduction, so this is about training reduction, training volume reduction, right? So this isn't about like, oh, this person, you know, we can apply this to multiple athletes because it's about a percentage of training volume reduction. Not about, well, that person runs this much and that person runs this much. It's like, hey, what happens if you both take 10% off your training volume? So yeah, what happens if you take 10% off your training volume? After you're going to experience a little bit of loss of fitness, but you might not even notice it. It kind of depends on how long you are in that reduced training state. I mean, eventually we are going to hit a stagnation point where if we're not applying any sort of principle of progressive overload and we're just doing the same thing literally every single week, week over week, month over month, eventually you will hit a plateau where you need to apply more stimulus in order to improve your fitness. But a 10% reduction in training load will essentially have little detraining effect for a period of weeks, possibly months. Training reduction of 50%, you may experience around a 5 to 10% detraining effect, right? Decrease in fitness. A couple weeks to get back to your previous fitness levels. Again, depends on how long you are in this reduced state. But again, reducing your training, we'll use this as an example. So reducing your training by 50% for 4 weeks would have a, let's say, about a 10% impact on your fitness, as opposed to reducing your training to zero for 4 weeks would have, what do we say, about a 20% reduction to your fitness? Yeah, that's pretty significant. Training reduction of 70%, about a 15 to 20% detraining effect. But long term, this is much preferable to 40, 50, 60% detraining effect. After reducing your, and again, the longer you're in this period of reduction, the bigger the impact is going to be, both in that initial and in that kind of drop. Because the longer, right, the more significant the reduction, the bigger that initial loss of fitness will be. And that's really what influences kind of where you start to level out in terms of, you know, leveling out about where your base fitness is after that loss. 15 to 20%. You can reduce your training by 70% and still maintain a reasonably good level of fitness for a pretty long time. Now, of course, if we cease training altogether, you're going to lose a lot more fitness. It won't really level out. You will still probably incrementally continue to lose fitness even during those periods of time where you are losing less fitness, right? Kind of drop off, level off, but then it'll continue to kind of decay over time. And yeah, it's going to take the longest to return after doing absolutely nothing for weeks on end. But it's an interesting thought exercise, right? To think, okay, I could still maintain a lot of my fitness and really limit any reduction, any large significant reductions in my fitness simply by doing almost anything will limit the detraining effect. And additionally, there are some recommendations for, hey, if you're like, I have no time, but I want to do something. Now, this has all been predicated on reducing training volume, right? So let's say you are still running, you're just running less. What if you can't run, but you can maintain the same volume? Will you lose fitness? Well, not necessarily. So again, talking about training stimulus, the application of a training stimulus to maintain or improve your fitness. Studies have shown that if you essentially can maintain the same volume of training, you can maintain or even continue to improve your fitness. So they specifically look at this with runners and aqua jogging. So they've looked at runners essentially being forced into the pool because of injury or injury concerns. Can maintain your running specific fitness through aqua jogging at the same volume, like take your training, same duration, same intensity, just do it in the pool instead. Maintain that's your fitness for 6 weeks, possibly more. As we know, you can perform extraordinarily well on high cross training, low run volume training. Talked about this last year at the end of the year with Coach Kim Nettow as Parker Valby as an example. Parker Valby is an incredible athlete. She just broke her own like NCAA 5,000 meter indoor record. Like, she's unbelievable. And part of her training is significant amounts of cross training.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
She runs very little for an athlete of her caliber, but she trains a lot with cross training. So it all really depends on what you're trying to achieve and what you have access to. So the takeaway really is, yes, taking time off will impact your fitness, but in some cases, that is not only desired, but necessary. In some cases, it's not desired, but it's necessary. And it's much easier to regain fitness than it was to gain it the first time. Now, of course, we would hope that significant portions of time off in your training year are rare. But I think it's really important to remember that your body, like I said, your body's talking to you. If you are finding yourself forced into long periods of time off every so often, that may be because of training balance and an issue there. Your body, let's put it this way, if you don't find the time to balance the training and the recovery with and the life stuff, all of it, right? All of that, the balance that you have of stress and recovery, your body will force you to take time off. Maybe you will get sick. Maybe you will get injured. Maybe you'll just have a mental breakdown. No shame. We've all been there. Maybe you're thinking, wait, what? Sometimes your brain's just like, you know what? We're not going to do this anymore. You're going to need to take some time off. However, it's much more effective for you, the person, to be proactive about building recovery, building time off into your schedule than it is to be forced into taking large periods of time off when you don't want to. If you are not regularly including down weeks in your training, if you are not regularly taking the time to recover after races, if you are jumping from race cycle to race cycle to race cycle to race cycle to race cycle, you're going to need, your body's going to force you to take some time off at some point. I think a lot of times as maybe it's different for men, because I can only speak to my own experience. But I have noticed that it seems like for a lot of us, and this is something I'm still working on too, it's very challenging to think of our body as our friend and ally and partner, especially when it's not doing the things that we think it should be doing. And it's very easy to fall into this thing as thinking that our bodies, and sometimes even our minds, are this adversary that must be conquered. That I can force it to do what I want it to do, that I get angry at it when it doesn't perform the way that I think it should perform. It's not doing what I think it should be doing because I want it. Gosh darn it. I want it so bad. Why is my body not cooperating? Or mind or whatever it is. It's not your enemy. Your body is your friend. You need to start listening to it. The problem is that it's probably going to tell you some things that you don't want to hear. But you need to learn to work with your body. A symbiotic relationship that you have with the thing that makes you go is going to allow you to become the most effective version of yourself, the most consistent version of yourself that you can be. So if you are continually ignoring signs like frequent illnesses or frequent injuries or needing to take months off after every training cycle, those are all red flags. Now, I'm not saying that like every time you get sick, you need to freak out, or every time you get injured, you need to freak out, or every time you take a couple extra weeks, you need to freak out. What I'm talking about is, are you systematically ignoring patterns that are trying to indicate something? And the thing about patterns, though, for runners is that this tends to play out on a much longer time frame than you realize. I'm talking about review the previous 12 to 18 months of training. If this is you, Think about not the last, like, you know, couple weeks, because a lot of the things, a lot of the issues that pop up originate way back in the past. I've worked with athletes where we've traced the origin of an issue back 2 years. And you think about it in the context of things. Because at the end of the day, if you are taking this much time off where you are about to significantly lose fitness, the loss of fitness is not the it's not the problem here. The loss of fitness is the least of your concerns. It's why have we gotten to a place where this has been something that is happening? And was there anything that could be done to prevent it? And in some cases, the answer is no, because you're going to get sick. COVID's still here. You were unfortunately, statistically, I'm knocking on wood, statistically likely to experience an injury as a runner. Hopefully not a serious one, but everybody pops up now. And then I've got a weird thing going on with my foot right now. I have no idea how it happened, like my toes. I don't know. It's fine. It happens, right? But it's about the patterns. It's about understanding the balance. It's about not freaking out if we do need to take time off. It's about doing the things that we can to minimize needing to take a lot of time off. And it's understanding that essentially anything is beneficial for your fitness. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. I hope it has helped to quell some concerns that you may have about getting sick and taking a couple of extra days off or needing to take a break because you got injured or totally burned out. Right? It happens. It's okay. But like I said, your fitness is not this monolithic thing that is your fitness. It's a bunch of different systems that all work together and are all connected. Your fitness is much harder to actually lose. Like, you're not going to accidentally misplace it. It's much, much, much harder to truly lose significant amounts of fitness than you think it is. It takes a lot longer. And essentially, if you're doing anything in your training week, you will slow down that detraining effect. And in some cases, going through the detraining process is necessary and beneficial for your long-term development. So don't freak out. It's going to be okay. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can always find and follow me on Instagram at Running Explained. And if you're looking for a coach or a training plan, check me out. Visit my website, runningexplained.co. That's runningexplained.co. See you next time. This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you have regarding a medical condition.